Welcome to Joiners, the podcast with Tim and Danny, where each week we explore the world of hospitality by chatting with its most colorful characters.
It's a very mystical intro.
Yeah, I like to go up and down, change the mood sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, just for our own entertainment.
How would you describe that mood?
I can't even. The word doesn't exist to describe it.
Ethereal? I'd go with ethereal. All right, Danny, a couple Crazy. Things here. How do you feel about a post-COVID buffet?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It's tough.
It's a tough sell.
I was at a place. I was checking out a new spot in West Town.
Humble Park. Is the buffet something that... Is the buffet at this particular place something that that existed before COVID?
Or
is this place a post-COVID place now offering buffet?
I'm not sure. It was my first time going. So they had like a buffet, like a weekend brunch buffet. And it was a group of four. It was me, Shan, Liz, and Brian. And we opted not to do the buffet, but we did walk the buffet line to kind of check it out and see what there was. It looked
and
good.
I noticed that you're not sick today.
I'm not sick.
Is that a coincidence?
It could be a coincidence. It could be intentional. I don't know. But I was like, man, it's kind of a big swing to do this. Like, I like a buffet. I like the options. We used to do for Easter every year, we would go out with my mom and Steve, and we'd go to... Z451. Did you ever go there?
No.
Oh man, it's like in River North, I guess.
I kind of remember seeing it.
A really beautiful restaurant, and they had just a killer buffet. It was like my big buffet
moment. Yeah, I mean, I like the Shaw's breakfast buffet. It's pretty epic.
Are they doing it post COVID?
I don't know, but pre-COVID it was great.
I love Shaw's, but I'm not a Shaw's brunch guy.
Oh, it's so good. Yes.
All you can eat crab.
Yeah, there's a lot of seafood on the different stations, but yeah.
Yeah. So I just don't know if we're ready for that. I was staying at a hotel in San Francisco. We were measuring people for suits out there last year, and they had an amazing buffet. But I was the first person down in the morning because we had an early meeting, and I'm like, okay, I'm the first person through this line.
Yeah.
And I made peace with that, but I don't know. I just don't know about buffets.
Yeah, it's a little iffy, I guess.
Okay, and then another thing I wanted to ask you about, off topic. You decorate for Christmas.
I thought you were going to say off the record, and I was like...
No, off topic. Off topic of food, but...
Yeah, we decorate.
Okay, and when do you take your Christmas tree down?
Sometime in January.
Okay. I ask because my next-door neighbor still has his Christmas tree up.
No, that's nuts.
It's March 11th.
I think Valentine's Day is like the outside date.
Yeah, even that's pushing it.
Yeah.
We always get a gigantic tree.
Yeah.
And so I'm eager to get it out of my living room.
Yeah. But, it's like shedding needles.
And part
everywhere.
Of it is he has the, what is it? The talus or what's the thing that you hang on the door?
Oh yeah. The mezuzah.
Mezuzah. So my neighbor's Jewish. He has that on his
door. And he has a big tree.
Door. And he has a tree. Well, his girlfriend lives there too, who I assume is a Gentile like me.
Yeah.
And that's the reason for the Christmas tree. But like, I'm like, do I need to tell him? Like, it's time to take it down.
Weird.
Yeah. Huh.
And it's a real tree.
No, it's not a real tree. Actually, that's probably part of it. Is it's,
yeah,
there's,
it's not shedding.
The rush?
Yeah, there's no rush.
He's like, I'm set
he's
up early
free,
for
man.
Next year.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe he's onto something.
Yeah,
I assume it's fake because it has like fake snow on it. It's one of those. Yeah.
Unless, is it snowing inside his apartment?
It's not snowing in mine, but I don't know what he has his AC set to or his humidity levels.
It's got a magical, maybe it's, an enchanted tree.
Well, the neighbor on the other side also had his tree up into March. So I'd walk the dogs, I'd kind of look up at our building, and I'd see that I'm like flanked by Christmas trees. I'm like, what's going on? Like, did I miss
maybe it's
memo?
An elaborate prank.
Yeah, but now my neighbor to the south, his is gone, and it's just one lone tree. So.
All right, so that tree's got to go soon then. Now that there's someone else, now that there's no one else to encourage it, I mean.
Yeah, it's the last tree in the building. You won.
The pressure's on.
You won.
Yeah, you
take
did
it down.
That's right. 100%. Yeah.
All right.
So changing gears yet again.
That's
we
right.
We have a great guest for y'all
Back
this week.
Back on topic.
We have Monica Casillas-Rios, who I haven't known her a particularly long time, but I had a lovely visit to her bar at Elska the other night. And, she's got the Michelin recognition, one of the first people to ever be recognized by Michelin for cocktails, which is very cool.
It's about time.
It's about time. And
now they just need to introduce uniforms to the Michelin
uniform.
Program.
Sponsored by Stock.
Yeah. And this was also closing another relationship loop.
It was. Yeah. We had David, Anna, and now Monica.
Well, her boyfriend.
Oh, Brad and Bolt, sorry. Oh, yeah, relationship loop. Yeah. We're also closing an Elska loop. But yes, Brad Bolt was on the pod. They're in a relationship. And yeah, I guess I didn't know about her upbringing and all that
Detroit
stuff.
Detroit native, made her way to Chicago and really kind of carved her own career in cocktails.
Yeah.
So without further ado,
here's our conversation with Monica Casillas-Rios. Monica, welcome in.
Thanks for having me.
So you just came off a guest bartending gig?
Yeah, I just did a guest bartending shift yesterday, and it's like I'm not used to that bartending anymore. I think it's probably been like 6 years since I've done like 3 deep bartending.
Oh man, so it was 3 deep?
It was for the most of the night, yes.
Wow.
With these events, I feel like at a certain point, like the first 2 hours, you're just cranking out your cocktails. You're like, sell a lot of them, which is what happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And then it's just like everybody's ripping shots. And I'm like, all right, guys, I'm going to go now.
This is where I exit.
It's like, what? I'm not drinking right now.
How do you determine the menu for this sort of thing?
Well, so it was an agave and Mexican spirits based event. So it's really like, okay, here, have this tequila company and this mezcal company. And of course they gave me Mahinta. So I was like, oh shoot, thanks. Thanks for that one. Yeah. And it's essentially just like, okay, what have I created? What do I think is good? And what is it going to be approachable and like easy enough for them to like batch and create? And I was like, all right. So I think I did like a Bijou mezcal riff.
Yeah.
And then a carrot miso tequila cocktail.
Nice.
And sold that within like 2 hours. Like, I think everybody did. It was just 100 people, 300, I think it was like 250 people on the RSVP list.
Whoa.
And then, yeah.
Damn.
Like, for a Sunday night?
Yeah, that was
Sunday
a big,
night. Yeah.
Big
was
crowd.
Like, leading up to the day, I was like, oh, it's kind of sleepy in West Loop. Maybe I just won't be too crazy. And then like 8 o'clock, I'm like, oh, where are these people coming from? But it's good. It's like a lot of people that are recognized from going to these events. But it was good. I probably won't be doing one of those anytime soon. Unless it's like, okay, yeah, you have like six... My usual ask is like 6 bar seats, and it was like people slowly coming up. I'm like, I can't do people coming at me, yelling. He's like, let me get this. I'm like,
Yeah, it's pretty controlled in the Elska environment.
It is.
Was the Mijenta thing a coincidence?
Yes.
Oh, wow. And do you want to explain why that's a coincidence?
So the person that runs this, his name is Jose, and he's like, hey, do you want to do this? Can you do this? I was like, okay, let me check with work. Cool. He's like, by the way, why can't I remember the name of the skull? But regardless, he's like, and you'll have Mahinta as the tequila you're working with. I was like, do you realize that's my boyfriend, right? He's like, oh, no, I didn't realize. Okay, I'll be in touch with him then. I was like, great, perfect.
I know the spirit intimately.
Yeah, you're like, I could just text him if you want.
I was like, he's like, do you need a sample? I was like, no. I'm good. I think I know the person if I need a sample.
We did an in-studio tasting with Brad.
Oh.
Yeah, he just brought it out.
Yeah. In the middle of the interview, he's like, and let's do a tasting. Like, cool.
Yeah. He always has some sort of, it's like interesting. He's like, okay, if you can sell spirits without having to drink, I can totally bartend without having to drink.
There you go.
My career the last 4 years has been like bartending, but not really drinking.
All right. So let's bring it back a little bit. Yeah. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay.
I grew up there. Like, I think I moved there when I was like 2 or 3. I was originally from Mexico. So I was born in Mexico, and then my parents moved to the United States. And so then from like 2 to, I guess now like 28, I lived in Detroit, and, mostly in like a neighborhood called Mexican Town. So I think it's just, my parents were like, all right, we don't have to speak English here. It's cool. We're going to grow up here. So super like traditional.
Is that downtown Detroit?
It's like right outside of downtown Detroit. So I think it's like 1 mile outside of it.
A mile from the giant fist?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember going to where that fist is like Hart Plaza.
Yeah.
I remember going there a lot as a young kid, and I was like being very confused by it. I'm like, why is there just like a fist
Danny,
in the middle of the street?
There's like a 30-foot long forearm and fist in downtown Detroit.
Yeah, a lot of people just take pictures.
What's
with
the story of it?
I think it's just the Joe Louis fist.
Oh.
Yeah. See, I don't know too much, I guess, like boxing history.
You knew that.
I just know that Joe Louis was like maybe a Detroit boxer.
Yeah, there you go.
But then there was the stadium that I like would go to for hockey games, and of course now that's torn down.
Oh man!
And in its place is like Pizza Arena, so Losi's Arena. So we went from having this historic boxing like boxer to now being like, oh no, you get to go to Little Caesars Arena.
Little Caesars, yeah, Little Caesars, the Illich fortune.
Yes,
it's like,
yeah.
They own so Little Caesars, Illich guys. Tigers, Red Wings. They own almost everything.
Yeah, and then I think right now it's like Pistons and Red Wings play at Little Caesars Arena. So now I think it's like they just wanted to bring everything downtown. This is before you'd have to go to like Auburn Hills, which is like an hour away to see, watch the Pistons. And I mean, even before the Lions, I think it was like you had to go still to like for out like go to the suburbs to watch sports.
Yeah.
So like finally, it's like everything's downtown. I'm like, cool.
Tigers are Comerica, right?
Yeah.
And that's downtown.
And yeah, they're literally, it's like a block away. So now all the stadiums are like a block away from each other. Whereas and here, you just have to go to the outskirts.
White Sox might be moving to the river. Do you see the renderings of the new spot?
Is that true?
Yeah.
So it's closer to downtown or further away from downtown?
I think it's closer.
Okay.
I know it's on the river, so you could have like a boat situation like, like in San Francisco. You can watch a game. But you couldn't catch a home run. You'd have to catch a foul ball.
Okay.
But I looked at the renderings. It looks really cool.
Okay. See, I always think it's like, especially with like that team being so much like, that the fan following is so vastly different than like the Cubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how I feel about that. Like,
yeah.
You take away this like very much like,
South
these
side.
Fans care about the sport. And then moving it up. I'm just like, I don't know.
That is the People say Cubs. I don't know. Wrigley's changed a lot. Yeah.
I went to my first Cubs game last year. I had gone to like multiple White Sox games.
Yeah.
And Tigers games.
I think the food's better at a Sox game.
I don't think I mean, a hot dog is a hot dog.
But Sox has like a bunch of like random ethnic, you know, delicacies. Yeah. At
See,
the Sox games. Like there's the Cubanos. There's like all sorts of stuff.
Bone of beef, rainbow cone.
Yeah.
I think I've just always just had hot dogs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah. I think my
Nothing
first...
Nothing wrong with that.
My first White Sox game post-moving here, a bunch of us were like, let's see how many hot dogs you can have. And I had 7 hot dogs in one game.
It was a dollar hot dog night?
Yeah. I don't know what it was, but we're like, who? And I didn't throw up.
How are you having these hot dogs? What's on them?
I think... Okay. This is a...
Oh, boy. Here we
okay,
go.
Okay. Please don't... I get
no
it. I'm
judgment.
In Chicago.
Yeah.
There's this controversy that I have with everybody. I'm from Detroit. And so... I grew up with ketchup on everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I will put ketchup on my hot dog.
Yeah, that's okay.
I defend that stance. So much so that I will post a picture of a hot dog with ketchup on it and tag all my friends in it. Just to spite them.
Jeez.
Wait, so were these hot dogs just ketchup?
Most of them were ketchup. And then at one point I was like, you know what? I can't do a condiment. This is like filling
so
too much sugar.
Yeah,
like
I'm on board
dog.
With just ketchup, though. I think if you don't go Chicago style, you go just ketchup.
Yeah.
If you're going to do ketchup, it has to be alone.
Well, being from Detroit, it's like Coney dogs.
Right.
It's like loaded.
What's your Coney spot?
So there's a spot called Dooley's. So I'm not I go outside of the American versus Lafayette.
Yeah.
Dooley's is in Southwest Detroit. And I still think Anthony Bourdain also agrees with me on this, that Dooley's is the best Coney in Detroit.
Hmm.
So, I agree with Anthony Bourdain, but mostly because I grew up a block away from it.
Tim, what's the most hot dogs you've ever consumed in a sitting?
Not a lot. I had 2 last week for lunch.
Oh, nice.
Right here at Hound Dogs. It's not a bad spot. Although, they don't do sport peppers, they do jalapeno slices.
I like have an issue with a Chicago hot dog.
Yeah, like the fully dressed one.
Well, this is definitely the audience to air your grievances.
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm not from here, so in my defense, I was like, well, I've only been here for 5 years, so like, I'm not there yet.
Give
I'm
it
not an
5.
Official Chicagoan yet.
I think I just have two hot dog mindsets.
Yeah.
One, like I'm eating the Chicago dog, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And then like if I'm kind of like childhood nostalgic dog, I'm doing like ketchup and mustard and onions.
I've learned to appreciate the Chicago dog.
Yeah.
Like, I like it now. But I'm still like, do you want my sport pepper? Because I can't do it. It's too much. It's like, it goes everywhere. I think the last time...
messy.
My last hot dog was Home Depot hot dog.
Yeah, that's a good
one. I had a hankering for a hot dog. I was at Home Goods and I was like, you know what? It's right next door. Let's do it.
It's one of the best.
The Depot dog's brilliant. And I want to start a competitor at Menards.
Okay.
The Menards dog.
The Menards dog.
Okay.
Because I go to Menards. I'm a Menards guy. 11% cash back.
But I think they need to have like their own, have Menards do like a different kind of food.
Okay. Like, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe a Polish.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
I don't know.
All right. So you grew up in Detroit.
Yeah.
And you've kind of, I'm sure you've seen the city like be kind of revitalized and change a lot. And like at what point do you find hospitality, the bar world?
So I actually grew up, so being that I grew up in Southwest Detroit, grew up around a lot of Mexican restaurants, and I actually started working in restaurants when I was 16.
Okay.
So I was in restaurants off and on from like 16 to like 19. And then in college, I like went off and did office jobs and whatever, little internships. And I ended up bartending at a friend's bar when I was 22. And I will say I was the shyest kid when I was growing up. And something about that bar, I think it's like being forced to talk to people. It's like, okay, cool. I have a personality.
Yeah.
But it's like a different personality. I'm like, I don't probably won't see these people tomorrow. I don't have to see them in the real world.
The transactional conversation.
So it's like a lot of acting. And so I think it's just like, it forced me to grow a personality where I'm just like, all right, yeah, I talk to people for a living now. So it was like a very much a dive bar. So most of it's like when you work in dive bars, it's a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a lot of like actually like talking to your guest, like hearing their stories, like the most interesting things. And at the time, this bar was like a very small bar. It's like half bar, half pool hall, and like had the biggest selection of illegal Mexican spirits I've ever seen. So it's like I grew up drinking and like kind of selling a lot of these spirits. Because of how illegal it is, I'm pretty sure they still... I was like, I wouldn't want me to name them. By the way, it's this place in Southwest Detroit. And then after that, I actually took on... I left that bar and took on like what I thought was going to be my career. And worked as a paralegal for a year. And I hated it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what do I do? This is what I thought I was wanting to do. And ultimately, I like went back into hospitality and... I can't remember what year it was, but I was like 25 and stepped into like a different Detroit than I grew up in, where it's like, oh cool, there's like cocktail bars, there's fine dining, there's like all this stuff. Like I was working at a Mexican restaurant growing up, and now it's like, okay, craft cocktails and wine, and not really having like I had an understanding from being a guest, but like not knowing like the inner workings of this world yet. And
was Sugar House like the biggest game in town at that time?
Yeah, so they were the first in Detroit proper. They were the first cocktail bar. So I got lucky enough to like work for that group for a little bit, and that's kind of where I like got my introduction to cocktails.
Was that the first bar that you walked into where you had like a proper cocktail experience?
Oh yeah. Yeah, so as a guest, Sugar House was definitely the first. I'm like, cool. It's not just like I was drinking White Russians at the time. Like yeah. I was not fancy with my cocktail game whatsoever.
Hey.
And then you can introduce. I mean, I still had to find a White Russian. But you know, you have a daiquiri and you're like, what is this? This is not like boozy and it's balanced. And then I like started drinking Sazeracs. Like it's like what? Like it's like okay, cool. I can drink like high proof spirits and like not be disgusted. Sweet. Yeah. No, but when I started working at their restaurant writing company, I had no knowledge of like true cocktail bartending or like wine service. And within like, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks of being there, like I got taken under like a great person's wing and like was just shown how to do everything. So I started there as a barback. So like ultimately I left there because I was started dating somebody. And after a couple of months, I went on to work at a bar, which is now closed, unfortunately, called The Keep, which was probably my ideal version of like a cocktail bar, very much like dive bar. But like the owner was from New Orleans, so like very much like classic cocktails all the way. So learned a lot there. It's like the Detroit equivalent of like Sportsman's, but like definitely like dingier
and like
less polished.
Yes, less polished. Ultimately, I was not a great bartender at the time, so I did get let go. But as like
for what reason?
No, I just was not up to speed. I was a baby bartender.
Yeah, like you weren't quick enough at the time.
I wasn't quick enough. I didn't know enough at the time, and so luckily they still. I still stayed connected with the owner and like.
So you left on good terms.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, to this day, they're like, he comes into Elska and supports me and is like, oh my God, you're like, you know, now like this like grown up bartender. I was like, yeah. You know, it took me a lot of people telling me like, you're a shitty bartender to be like, I should probably get better at this. No, I think like during my early years of like hospitality, just like a lot of people like, you're trying to find your footing and learning. And I think it took me a long time to be like, this is the kind of place I want to be at. And I did have, I feel like I worked a lot of places in Detroit. And like at one point, I kind of got sick of working in Detroit after opening up a restaurant that was like super fine dining, steakhouse. And it was the wrong kind of environment for me. It was like, I worked at Roast, like Michael Simon's Roast, for like 3 years. And that was probably the ideal steakhouse version, where I went into.
What made the new one so much worse?
So, or it, not it's, a good I think fit, it I should took say. Getting a pen thrown at my face to be like, man. Ooh, this is not the crowd that respects their bartender.
So the crowd threw a pen. So some like patron threw a pen at your face.
To get your attention?
No, it was more like I gave him his check and he's like, don't give this to me until it's over $1,000, and threw a pen at my face.
Wow.
Yeah. Man.
Only in Detroit.
Well, it was more like, it was Detroit. It's a Detroit restaurant, but it was a Birmingham crowd.
Oh,
so it was
there
like the equivalent of like, oh yeah, I'm better. Like no respect
for
hospitality workers whatsoever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's, it's like, rough. People were spending like $1,000 on dinners, $2,000 on dinners.
Age of the patron?
Yes.
How old was the person, the pen thrower?
I think he was no older than like mid-30s.
Yeah, he's like, an entitled young
It was one of those like, you can tell who's like...
Trust funder
or like new money, where it's like, I'm better than you. So it's like, I kind of got sick of that. So ultimately, I ended up leaving there and just hopping around and helping friends and at bars for like a summer, and I was like, where do I want to be? And ultimately I ended up leaving Detroit, still living in Detroit, but started working in like 45 minutes away from Detroit in Rochester Hills at a place called the Meeting House. So it's like on the main strip of Rochester, and it was still very neighborhoody enough where I was like, cool, I have regulars, sweet, like there are people that come to the bar to hang out with me. And I think that also was like, oh cool, bartending doesn't have to be about these like cocktails, doesn't have to be a wine. It's like I can just hang out with the guests will come in just to hang out.
Yeah, it was kind of like all the way full circle to like starting at the dive bar in the beginning.
Yeah, no, it like came back to be like, oh, it's like, it was a great bar had a good cocktail program, but it was like so much more than that. Yeah. I think it's because there's something about the suburbs, of restaurants in the suburbs, that people really like. I don't know, maybe the suburb life is a little boring and like restaurants and bars are like, you know, this is like the most exciting part of my day. But it was like fun to have that. I was there for a year and then I decided to move to Chicago.
And throughout this journey, is your family supportive? Like when you were a paralegal at that time and you're like, this is what I want to do. And then you told your family like, you know what, I'm done with this. I want to go back to hospitality. Yeah. Were they like, sounds good?
Oh no, my parents are not supportive at all about it. Mostly because, so, backstory. So I started at that dive bar because it was the bar that my dad used to go to.
Okay.
And so because my friend's family owned it, I was like, okay, I'm getting offered this job. If I work there, my dad's no longer going to be there. So my father drank a lot.
Yeah.
And
so you did it like intentionally to have not show up there.
Yes. Oh. So fast forward to me having like deciding to have a career and you know, alcohol and spirits. My mom was not happy about it.
Yeah.
She's like, you know, and so my mother is like the regional leader of like her Al-Anon group. So it's like very much like, oh, cool, you have a daughter that's a bartender. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not, doesn't really fit. No, they're supportive now that I've like.
Were they always just kind of like worried that
you had the gene?
Yeah, I guess. Well, so.
Yes. Oh, my mom absolutely was like, do you have your drinking in order? And like,
yeah.
Most of the time I was like, yeah, I got it. And I'm like going to Sportsman's three times a fucking week. No, it's very, I think my work and drinking like looks very different since being at Elska.
Yeah. I mean, you drink, I mean, I don't know, famously is the right word, but on record, you like to drink kind of lower ABV things.
Oh, yeah.
NA things.
Yeah.
You're not really like drinking heavy stuff from my understanding.
I think that like my first 9 months in Chicago, I was very much like, oh, this is exciting. I gotta have to go to every single bar and drink a lot. And then the pandemic definitely slows that down. The pandemic was like, well, I don't believe in drinking at home, mostly because of like growing up with somebody that like abused alcohol. So I was like, I'm not drinking at home. So I didn't drink for like, I think like 5 months.
Yeah.
And then I think my outlook on drinking was like, well, I don't need to like, I don't really need to drink every night that I like go out to work.
Yeah. It's like, funny because I feel like other people during the pandemic had the opposite.
Yeah. I've heard that a lot.
I drank more during the pandemic.
I think I drank and like made cocktails at home like the first week, and I was like, oh, I'm not used to doing this. I don't like doing this.
Yeah.
So it's like, what else can you do? We were getting like the breezies to go from Astereo and stuff, and just trying to support the bars.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like, you know, like a Wednesday at noon, be like, oh, I have a cocktail.
Yeah. I cooked a lot. Yeah. I cooked every single day. Because I was like, okay, so there was an issue because I had just moved to Chicago. And so when everything shut down and everybody was like getting employment, I only got like a certain percentage of like what I could because I was so new to the city.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, I can't get takeout every day. So I have to cook for myself.
Wow.
So like the pandemic, instead of drinking a lot, I just ate a lot, went on walks. And like I ultimately learned how to cook. You tried to beat the
7 hot dog record.
God, I don't think I can do that anymore. I have two, and I'm like, God, I'm out for the week. My stomach is not the same.
Did you cook before, or did that force you to become a good cook?
No, I didn't cook at all before.
Oh, cool. What was your strategy?
I think it was just like, blogs? I was also like trying to take better care of myself. I think it was like, there's a whole like, you become so aware when you like, you know, work. I was working like, so I was working two jobs when I moved here, and working, you know, 6 days a week and like running off of like takeout and going out to restaurants on days that I wasn't working. And so, you know, when you are forced to like, you get all that taken away from you, it's like, okay, I really had to learn how to cook, how to like, you know, just have a better like balanced life.
Yeah. And to Tim's point, like, were you like looking at cookbooks? Were you going online?
Yeah, no, I was looking at a lot of cookbooks. I mean, at the time, I watched a lot of the Bon Appetit videos, and so I had a lot of this, like, and the Alison Roman days of her cookbooks. Yeah, those are fun. And it's very easy, very, like, approachable recipes. So then, like, going, so now I can just, like, okay, what do I feel like cooking? And, like, tweak, like, now it's, like, second nature of, like, how things are supposed to taste. So just spending, like, 6 months cooking for myself and not really drinking, I was like, okay, I have a better balanced lifestyle. Ultimately, when I started working again, I was like, I don't want to work 6 days a week. I don't want to go out every single night.
Yeah.
So, like, I try to, I mean, I go out a lot more now.
What was your,
what was your first Mienta visits?
What was your first job?
Yeah, exactly. That's mostly what it is. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're dating somebody that's half of their job is going out to restaurants. Like, all right, I guess we'll do that.
This episode is brought to you by Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, a tasty, versatile spirit. Created in Chicago in 2012, the product was born out of a need for a bespoke iteration of the Old Tom style, which is the slightly sweeter predecessor to London Dry. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin carries classic notes of orange peel, juniper, and coriander, while balancing on a subtle floral edge thanks to the addition of osmanthus blossoms. Its elevated proof is suitable in cocktails or unadorned. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, complete your bar.
When the pandemic started to slow down and places reopened, where was your first job?
So I actually, a friend was opening up a restaurant where La Serena used to be. And so for a little bit, I was serving, bartending, and managing at a restaurant called Marvin's. It was very short-lived. It was like super casual, and I was like, I don't know if I want to do casual. Like I enjoyed it for like the 6 months that I was there. And I was like, I don't know, this is not, like, it's making me money, but I'm not really happy.
Wait, was Marvin, is Marvin's not there anymore?
No, they closed, I think, like, a couple months ago. Nothing. I think it's going to turn.
It's in, like, Morgan's on Fulton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's closed now, and I think it's going to turn into something else. But for the time that I was there, I was like, this is not, like, really feeding what I want to be in my, like, as my profession or my career. And I randomly saw that Elska was hiring. But they were hiring a server. I was like, okay, I've never really done serving in fine dining. I've always been like behind the bar. So like, I could take the risks and be like, am I going to be good at this? So I like knew I was a pretty okay bartender. And I like already loved this restaurant. So I was like, you know what? Let's take the risk. Let's apply for the job interview. And it's funny because I actually, I had two interviews back to back. I'm not going to say the other one because I walked into this restaurant that's like close to our restaurant. Walked in and I was like, this feels very stale. And this feels like I am going to be wearing a suit and not really talking to guests the way that I want to talk to them.
It could be one of two places.
It's not the Smith. It's not the Loyalist.
I guess it could have been one of three, but okay, I gotcha.
It's another restaurant close by. But when I walked into Elska, I was like, okay, you know, I already love this restaurant. And I was lucky enough to be hired there. And so I started as a server there, and I really enjoyed it. And it was just like, brought me back to like, okay, this is the kind of world I want to be in. And Elska is a very special place, and I already had so much love for it. And it just, ending up there was just almost like a full circle moment for me, since it was like one of the inspirations for why I even moved to Chicago.
Elska was?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Elska was the first like tasting menu I had ever done in my life.
So you were visiting Chicago and ate there?
Yeah, so
I guess, were you coming to Chicago pretty frequently?
Yeah, so I was coming to Chicago like every other month.
Oh, wow.
So I had a very, I didn't really like Chicago the first time I had to visit it. Back before I like got back into restaurants, and back before I was a paralegal, I worked at a logistics company. And so I was an office manager, but we had a nonprofit offshoot, and one of our clients was in Chicago. So I was in Chicago maybe like for like 3 days every month, but I was staying in the loop.
Yeah.
And so that's stupid. Like I know now it's like, if you're in the loop, it's going to be boring. So I was like, oh, Chicago's kind of boring. And ultimately when I went back to working in restaurants, it was like 2017. I was on a trip with like an ex-boyfriend at the time, and he was very much involved with the wine world. So it was like a wine trip.
Okay.
So we're at Cellar of Provisions, which I love, still love. I'm very upset that they no longer do
I know. Lunch and I did that brunch all the time.
Yeah. I did it. It was like a yearly occurrence for me. Like, it was my every single birthday from like, I think it's like 2016 to like 2019. It was just like, that's how I spent my birthday morning. I would come to Chicago. I'd do that. So I'm at Cellar Provisions, and my boyfriend at the time had worked with somebody that was one of the sous chefs at Elska. We run into them there, caught up with them, and they're like, yeah, I work at Elska. And we're like, we have no idea what that is. He's like, hey, you guys should come in. We go in, and I was like, this place is awesome. Just like, as somebody that just really likes very minimalist things, I was like, this is just aesthetically really comforting. And then I think we had been in Chicago for like 5 days at that point, and I was done with the alcohol. I was like, I'm over the wine. I'm over the spirits. I need just like a good, like non-alcoholic, you know, cocktail. So I did, we did the tasting menu, and then Elska's always had a non-alcoholic pairing. And I was just like, this is insane. Like, the pairing's insane. The food's insane. It's like so outside of anything that I'd ever eaten. And I just like fell in love with that restaurant so much. Like, I attempted to go back to Elska, at least for like dessert.
Was this Kyle there at the time, or?
I'm not sure. It was 2017, so I think Kyle was still there, but I think Jake might have been behind the bar.
Okay.
I was like, so like, I didn't really care about bartenders. Like, not that I don't care about the bartender, but it's more
sorry,
like that.
Sorry, Danny.
Yeah, it's all right.
No, it's more, it's like everybody's a human being. And like, I think at the time I was just like, not as like outgoing still.
So yeah.
2017. Yeah. So first tasting menu, fell in love with this restaurant. And then I think that was the trip that I was like, I want to move to Chicago. So this is April of 2017. And like, I'm still like, oh, I want to move to Chicago. And I actually don't convince myself until about January of 2019. I'm snowed in. It's like big snowstorm with my friend. And we're watching like the Chef's Night Out videos. And then I'm watching all the Chicago ones. And I was like, yeah, that spot was great, and that spot was great. And then I watched Anna and David's, and I'm like, I fucking love this restaurant so much. I'm like, I like want to like move to Chicago because this kind of restaurant really like showcases like the kind of hospitality and like kind of professional that I want to be. And not being like, oh, I want to move to Chicago and work there. So I kind of, my friend's like, you know what, you should move there. Like, if this is something you want to do, you should do that. So I started applying for jobs and kind of started putting in my brain, you should move there. So it's January of 2019. I kind of give up and like continue working in Rochester. And in May of 2019, I come to Chicago for Chicago Style and just meet a bunch of people. And just like, okay, this, you know, the city has like a great community. 2 weeks later, I come back to look at a sublease, to talk to the guys from Bad Hunter. I get offered a job. 2 weeks after that, I made a move to Chicago. Wow, made a move. Fast. Yeah, pretty fast. It was a quick turnover. I didn't have like a lease where I lived. My job was like, yeah, cool. You know, do what you need to do. And I had a job. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take the chance, move here. And yeah, I worked at Bad Hunter. I worked at Volume 39. And of course, then the world shut down.
Yeah.
Then fast forward, get a job at Elska. The day that I started my training, I got like a Facebook memory on Facebook, or you know, got a memory on Facebook that the first time at Elska had been the same day in 2017 than the first training day.
Wow.
Which was like really shocked me. I was like, you know what? This is like a very full circle moment. No, but I've been there for, I think almost 3 years now. It's like a very special place. And I'm always just like, it's always like sad when I'm like, have you been to Elska? He's like, what? I was like, oh, you don't know what you're missing.
Do you remember your Elska interview?
Yeah, I think it was like, so Renee, our now I think we can call her like director of operations. She was our GM at the time. It was very much like just asking kind of what kind of hospitality person I was. It wasn't like really talking about my skills. It was talking about my background. And like, I think I like, it was like it was essentially like a love letter to Elska in my interview. And I'm like, oh God, I left that interview. Like, they're going to think I'm fucking obsessed with them. They're not going to want me there. No, but yeah, I think like 2 days later I got asked to work with them and yeah.
So you started as a server then?
I started the server there. And at the time, like, I ended up becoming, like, the alternate bartender. So with Elska being such a small team, usually it's, like, one bartender, five servers. And I have an alternate bartender right now, so I was the alternate bartender. So I was already kind of, like, being like, hey, I made this cocktail, this non-alcoholic cocktail. If you want to use it, cool. If not, whatever. Since I'm, like, behind the bar some days.
And this is to Corey or to David?
Yeah, this was to Corey.
Okay.
This was to Corey. And so, yeah, sometimes like a cocktail of mine would end up before I even took over. And so fast forward, I think it was like, yeah, May of 2022. Corey was like, hey, I'm leaving. I was like, okay, what does that mean? He's like, you're taking over. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. And I was like, that's no. I was like, you can't make that decision. It's like, no, it's like you're taking over. And so then my manager talked to me about it. And I was like, just, you know, I was like, one, I missed being behind a bar.
Yeah.
I hadn't been behind a bar, like really full time in a year. And I was like, oh shit, now I have to run the show. Fuck. Because like, there's always like imposter syndrome when you're like taking over a program of that scale. And like, you know, there's this like, I think like Elska does everything there very well. So now it's like, okay, it's now up to me to make everything very well. But I've always had this belief in like the cocktail world where I was like, cocktails are so secondary to like this kind of experience, but the cocktails still have to be good. So thankfully, Anna and David like trust me to like do what I want to do with it. And like, I usually just think about the food first and be like, you know what? You can't be overshadowed by like too fancy of a cocktail, but it still has to be good. And luckily it's the cocktail program has been received well, pretty well.
Michelin recognition.
That was a very shocking award in a way where it's like, I think because of who I am as like a bartender, I never thought that I would be able to get, Like cocktails are so secondary. I'm very much on the train of like, no offense, but like fuck cocktails.
Yeah.
In a way where it's like, because I think my introduction to cocktails was like classic cocktails, but like in two different lights of like cocktails, bartenders and suspenders, like literally bartenders and suspenders and bow ties, the early days of Sugar House. So then being like, oh no, cocktails done well, but like in a very much like dive bar. And I was like, I like that better than the suspender and bartender. And this is the bartender, suspender bartender. So then when I took over at Elska, I was like, I don't want it to be this like weird thing. I don't want to use weird ingredients. I want to use whatever we're using in the kitchen. I want to use like, you know, like what's worked well before and like tie in the Elska ways. So like I've always thought about the cocktails like food first and then like spirits second, which is, I guess, has worked out well for me.
Yeah. So walk us through like a new dish hits the menu or Posey or whoever is saying like this dish is coming.
Yeah.
And you are like getting a preview of it. Yeah. And then does like do the wheels start turning and you're like, I know exactly like a new cocktail I'm going to make to pair with this or.
Well, I think I talk to like I ask all like David and I also asked TC, our pastry chef, like Anna and Anna as well. But I was like, okay, what are you putting on the menu next? Or what are you working with? What ingredients are you using? Because I always want to use things that are like also on the menu. So it's more like ingredient based rather than like what the food is. And so if somebody's like, oh, I'm going to use sea buckthorn, I was like, okay, I'll work my way around it. Or like, I'll work some that in. I was like, oh, well, it's citrus season, so let's work a lot with a lot of citrus. Or like one of the cocktails on the menu right now, David was like, hey, I have this syrup that is like a byproduct of an ingredient that we're making. Do you want to use it? I was like, fuck yeah.
So like byproduct syrup.
Yeah, no, we have, there's two byproduct. There's the like hazelnut syrup, but like I try to use as like.
That's cool.
I try to use the ingredients that are like if things come as extra from the kitchen.
Is there ever a concern that like, let's say you're using this hazelnut syrup that's a byproduct of the kitchen and then this cocktail becomes super popular that it's no longer like.
Oh, it's happened before. I have to work my way around it. Oh no, I have to check in and be like, so what's the hazelnut status? Like, I'm probably running out, and so I'll just work around it.
Can you swap the cocktails like every day if you need to?
I can. No, okay. I can. And like when I was first, when
it's
I first,
it's not like set for a period of time. Like the cocktail menu can change.
Right now it is. Okay. So, being one person, so one person bar team. I have a bar back. She's there 2 days a week. So, but it's like mostly like. I'm doing the bartending, I'm doing the cocktail creation, I'm doing the ordering, I'm doing the prep most of the time. When I first started, I was like so excited and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll change the cocktails every other week. You get burnt out real fast.
Yeah, I'm
creatively sure. Burnt out so quickly that now I'm like, okay, there's 3 months. A menu will be on for 3 months. 2 months of that time, I don't have to think about a goddamn thing. 1 month, I'll like R&D. And that's when like that month is like, okay, what is the kitchen like? What's the kitchen look like right now? And then I'll like put out a menu. So I'll do it on like a 3 month basis. But if I have to, I will like change a cock. Cause I mean, it's happened so much time.
Yeah, where availability it's like, of whatever.
Yeah. Not only our kitchen stuff, but also like spirits.
For sure. It happens all the time.
But I have the luxury that we don't have to print out like a book. And it's also such a short cocktail list. I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of sick of making this cocktail. Let's just change it for a little bit. Yeah. And it's happened before.
Yeah, it's a really nice, tight cocktail menu.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think, when I took over, it was like four cocktails, four spirited cocktails, and then two non-alcoholics. And now we're stuck with, or now I've stuck with the five cocktails, two to three non-alcoholics. And non-alcoholics do change a lot quicker, just because I'm like, you know what? Let's see what, like, it's a little warmer today. People want something more refreshing.
Yeah.
Or... oh, I found this new like non-alcoholic product that I really like. So let's work our way in there. But no, it's been I try to not burn myself out. So I try to keep it on the schedule now. Like I'm working on the spring menu, which probably will come out in like 2 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're in R&D phase.
Yes.
So this is the final month of this menu.
Do you start the year?
Or when do your menu shift?
My menu shift seasonal, so I try to do a change in March, I try to do a change in June, a change in September, and then a change in November. So kind of like right before the seasons change to like work into it. Of course, because I run on like a very seasonal way, sometimes I'm like, can I beat the strawberries or will the strawberries? Like, I was like, I can't do strawberries yet. Yeah. Or I can't do rhubarb yet. It's like, okay, I can incorporate something in the menu that I can like just switch out the ingredient later. Like right now it's like, all right, we're still in citrus season, but also it's going to, citrus season's going to die out. So let's ferment some stuff right now. Or like I'm fermenting some like grapefruit and oranges that like end up becoming a like we don't use the juice. So and we use the peel. So it's like, okay, I'm going to ferment that and turn it into a soda later. And then it's also like, okay, well, rhubarb is coming in. So I'll just use rhubarb. So spring is like, early spring is like still herby and like tart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had this issue the other day where somebody's like, can you do something with strawberries? I was like, homie, it's March. I don't got that right now.
Yeah.
Maybe I have a dehydrated version somewhere, but I don't got it. Well, we follow a very seasonal approach to the menu itself. So I think the cocktail menu should also kind of like show that. Yeah.
When you're developing cocktails, who is tasting them? Who do you trust for feedback?
I taste them, of course. I have my alternate I actually have the entire front of house staff taste because I think everybody has a different palate. And I don't think I have the best palate too. So, and after tasting and tasting and tasting, I just, my palate gets so
killed.
So killed that I was like, you taste this. What does it need? Because I think it's like, because everybody has a different palate, if I get an opinion from everybody on staff, I was like, okay.
Yeah,
consensus. If everybody thinks it's too sweet, then I should tail it down.
Yeah.
If everybody thinks it's like it's I think I get a good sense of where the cocktail needs to be, having everybody taste it, especially if it's I'm just one person.
Yeah, there's always someone on staff though that's like, I want it 10 times more bitter.
Yeah.
And you're like, everyone else agree with that? And they're like,
no.
But they're like super loud about it.
Yeah.
And they just keep arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that drives me nuts. Yeah.
And then ultimately,
by committee.
Yeah, and then ultimately, I pass them by David, and I'm like, okay, cool, because at the end of the day, it's their restaurant, so it should be not everything gets like passed by him, but I'm like, if I get a stamp of approval or get a nod or get a, it's good. I was like, okay, cool, I'll just put it on the menu.
Yeah.
And usually he's. I don't think I've made anything where he's like, no, this is not going on the menu or this is awful. So, I think that process has really helped out. I think like the one time where people were like, ugh, I was trying to figure out the martini, like the, now that's been on the menu for like 2 years. And I was like, God, I kind of want to do a pickle martini, but I don't know if I should. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a different kind of herb. And so I played around with basil first before I ended up with like the dill cucumber. I played around with basil and I kind of showed it to, I had my coworker Laura tasted it, and she's like, that tastes like pasta. I was like, that's not what I want to do. All right, let's nail it back.
The pasta martini.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, let's just do a pickle martini. I was like, oh, you know what? My heartburn is not letting me do acid in this, so let's just like not do an acidic point here. Let's just do dill and cucumber, and then ended up turning into what I have now.
Yeah, do you want to talk the audience through like that exact build for that martini?
Oh, and so the martini is essentially 50-50. It is one part vodka, one part quote-unquote vermouth, but that is split between Sailor's and a vermouth blanc, so technically a Negroni, technically a
50-50. Is it like a Dolin blanc? What blanc?
Yeah, vermouth? Yeah, okay. So Dolin blanc, but I take the Dolin blanc and infuse it with dill and cucumber for
so that's what you're infusing.
Days. Yeah.
Cool.
And that came from being like, okay, I want to use some sort of pickle thing, but I don't want it to be acidic. But I'm also, as one of the great things of being like the person that makes the cocktails is I do get to have my own like personal preferences on the menu where I'm like, I love a 50-50, but I also like white Negroni.
Yeah.
So like, why not do both in one cocktail?
Yeah. White Negroni is far superior to a regular Negroni.
Yes. But I'm also like, I'm very opinionated with my Negronis too. So
what's your build?
Yeah. What's your ideal?
So my ideal, so I really hate Campari. I think it's too bitter. I think an equal part Negroni is just, I was like, this is too much. I understand why people enjoy it, but I'm always like all right, one part spirit or one part, whatever, gin or two parts gin, one part the rest. Just because I think that's like, okay, the gin should be the main.
Yeah, the star of the show.
Star of the show. So I will do like 1.5, 75, 75 for most of the Negronis that I make.
Yeah.
And I have not had somebody tell me being like, no, this is not great. Obviously, if somebody orders a Negroni, I'll give them the proper. But if somebody's like, can you do a Mezcal Negroni? I was like, yeah, but it's not going to be equal parts.
You're like, not on my watch.
Nope, not going to happen. No, so yeah, that the martini ended up being like, okay, I'll do, you know, 1.5 vodka, 75 Sailors, 75 the Dolin Blanc with the dill. And it has not, it hasn't been a problem since.
Yeah, it's been on the menu for a long time.
The problem that I did have was the day, I was like, I had figured out like a different martini. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this like sailor man aquavit martini. It's going to be weird. It's going to be salty. It's going to be like the aquavit dirty martini. And the day that, the last day that the vodka martini was going to be on, I had so many people like, oh, this is so good. I'm just like, you guys can't tell me that. I'm about to change it. And so ultimately I changed it for, I think, a week. And then I had a couple guests be like, oh, I had this martini a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, okay, I'll put it back.
Yeah. And you have like a trident on the menu now, so yeah, you have your aquavit fix.
It is what David says, is the duck liver tart of the cocktail menu. Like, you can't take it off because people know it now. It's like, it's the one thing that everybody like knows is an Alska cocktail now,
yeah.
Which is nice. Now it's like, cool, I'm known for a martini, which is not something that I ever thought I would say.
Hey, that's great.
Yeah.
How many cocktails are on the menu at any given time?
So five spirited, two non-alcoholic. And I think unless I'm like working on something, it doesn't go below five. If I like am tweaking something, or if I can't figure out a substitution, I'll have it go down to four. Also, it's such a small. I think the cocktail program, like I said, is not that it's not important, but it's secondary. I think that Alska, the food, is the most important thing. I think that's like. I don't think this 40-seat restaurant needs a 10-cocktail menu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then within that five, what's your strategy to round it out? Or is that more informed by the food?
I think about like the ingredients first, but I will always be like, okay, there's going to be a sour drink. There's going to be a stirred, more spirit-forward drink. There's going to be a Collins drink. For some reason, it's been a Paloma riff for the last couple seasons. There's going to be some sort of milk punch if I decide that I want to put myself through that 36 hours of stress every week. And then, of course, the martini. So at least I only have four that I need to toy with. Because I know the martini is always going to be on there.
Yeah.
And then there's the playing around with the non-alcoholic stuff.
Yeah, what's the strategy there?
So with non-alcoholic stuff, I have always said it's like, oh, I don't need to use, you know, non-alcoholic alternate, you know, I use Sealip for a long time, and that I like the product and I'm glad it's there. Just sometimes it like dies in the, or the body's just not there.
Yeah.
So it's like, try to create something with like a more body. Luckily, I've found some great stuff. Martini and Rossi does like a great like non-alcoholic aperitivo, which I have in a like non-alcoholic dirty martini right now. And then I have like a non-alcoholic Rather. So Best Day also does really great products. And so it's like stuff that I would drink. It's like, if I wouldn't drink as somebody that doesn't really drink that much, I don't know why I would put it on the menu. So it's like stuff that I think it's like non-alcoholic, what I would reach for if I was making myself a non-alcoholic cocktail at the end of the day. It's like, okay, does it have body? Does it have like that to weight that people want? Mm-hmm. Or is it just going to fall like juice, which is, I think, the issue with non-alcoholic stuff.
Yeah, it can happen a lot.
Yeah.
What's a day in the life of a beverage director like? What time do you get in? What do you do before service? And then what do you do after service?
So typically, I live like three blocks away from the restaurant. It's probably too close. And I will normally like just start my day at home listening to music, just organizing myself. Maybe I'll watch like a YouTube video. Just like very quiet morning. Make myself breakfast if I feel like it. But I typically, I'm trying to get better at it, but I'll typically go into work around like 2 o'clock.
Do you have set hours, or you just whenever?
No,
you
know what you need to do. It's more like if I need, because I kind of run my own show, where it's like, as long as I'm there and set up for service, it's good. But I think I'm such, I don't know, I feel like, no, everything has to be perfect. I have to be there hours before to make sure everything is, like, even, all the prep is done, which I'm trying to let go a little bit more. So with this next menu, I'm trying a no-juice menu for the next one.
Like all acid-adjusted stuff?
Acid-adjusted or, like, fermented or vinegars. Also, we create so much waste with, like, juicing that I think it's, like, trying this is better. And so that's going to allow me to not be at the restaurant too much, being that I'm not spending half an hour juicing every other day.
Working smarter, not harder.
Yes. It's like there's it. So many different reasons for it. But yeah, I'll go in around 2. I'll assess what I need to do for the day. I'll set up, and then I'll get right into service at 5 o'clock, 5:30. Since I'm behind the bar, I'd say like 95% of the time. Every once in a while, I'll get a day off and throw my alternate bartender behind there. And then I think I'm usually done by like 10:30, 11 most days now, which is very early. And then I just take myself home. Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll be like, okay, I haven't been to Stereo in a while, or I haven't been to Best Intentions in a while. Let's go have a cocktail there. And then, I don't know. I think post-pandemic, I'm like, I don't want to be up until 1 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. 2 o'clock.
You were there pretty late the other night. We were there on, what, like a Saturday night?
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah.
That's not like...
Is it because Danny and Ellie wouldn't leave the dining room?
Pretty much, yeah.
I don't think you were the last
one.
No,
Brad
there.
Was the last one.
Brad is always the last one.
Brad showed up in just like a cloud.
Out of nowhere.
What, yeah. What kind of cloud?
Well.
Yeah.
Hey, it's legal, man.
Yeah, watch the Mindy video to find out.
Yes.
Okay.
That kind of cloud. But yeah, no, it was always great to see Brad. Yeah. So funny. Great energy.
No, it's not even that late. I think I was
yeah,
so
used to... Yeah, it
wasn't super
late. It was just later than like the 10 that you mentioned or whatever.
Yeah, I'd say, well, on like a common day, usually like, I'd say 11. I'm never there past midnight, which is great.
Yeah, that is sweet.
Yeah, and so like any other person is probably like, oh yeah, I still have time to like... go here or go there, and I'm just like, no, I've been in a restaurant all day
too. It's like, you know, it's just different yeah times.
Here's I feel like I do end up at Warlord a lot lately on Sundays, though. That's become my new like end of the week ritual.
How late are they serving food until?
I think like 1. Okay. But I usually end up there like 11:30,
and it's easy to get in at that
it's
time.
It's so easy, just all hang right out at the bar. It's food that's like a lot richer than what I'm like would typically eat, but it's like
I guess I gotta do that.
It's a nice unwind.
You still haven't been. We gotta go.
We gotta do it. We should do the Sunday routine.
Yeah.
You gotta okay. My Sunday routine. You gotta start the day with a smoothie.
All right.
Yeah. I'll do the full
pure,
thing.
You gotta walk to Pure
full
Green.
Monica. Yeah.
You gotta go walk to Pure Green.
Which one's Pure Green? Is that it by CVS?
No, the Pure Green is right next to Rosemary.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So
and
you start.
Bijou. What's
yes
the new restaurant?
Yeah.
New bar
so
right there.
You got to walk to Pure Green. You got to walk.
Yeah.
Drive there.
Got to walk.
Got to walk.
So I'm gonna start at Tim's apartment. It sounds like
you go to Stereo, have a coffee, drink your coffee, and
Stereo West Loop.
Yes. And then you do a little work, take your butt to work, and then you end the day at Warlord.
Yeah.
With a glass of wine, maybe a glass of wine, maybe
what
not.
Should I order at Warlord food wise?
For some reason, we always get oysters and then a burger.
Okay.
It's very much like maybe I'll try something else. But I think I've had the burger the last 3 weeks that I've been there.
So a Sunday night you can just walk in.
Yeah.
That late.
Well, yeah. I would say I tried it this Saturday to see what would happen at 11:30. An hour and a half wait, 11:30 is insane.
Yeah, you're like,
but
nah.
It's also the only thing that's open. That
yeah,
late.
Yeah. 11:30. I'm usually asleep. I've been asleep for 2 hours by then.
Yeah. No, so Sunday
on a Saturday.
And there. And then the fun thing that I guess happens there after like 11 is that they will turn off most of the lights so everything's like candlelit. And they will blast the loudest music ever imaginable.
Yeah.
Like some like
that's the tough part for me. I'm trying to
this is my personal nightmare
up
now. I think we need to maybe stand in line before they open.
Yeah. It's like I can
suffer through it like one time.
Yeah, with your special earpieces. Yeah,
exactly.
Just blasting. It's not always metal, but it's always some sort of like, I'm like, what is this like trance goth trance going on right now? the first time I was there that late, I was like, is this something they always do? And then I learned, I was like, yeah, 11 o'clock, the lights go off, the music goes up. And I was like, okay, it's a thing you guys do.
I've been taking my dog to physical therapy, which, by the way, is more expensive than my human physical therapy for some reason, which I don't love. Mm-hmm. But it's like a very serene setting. But then they're playing metal. And I'm like, this doesn't go with the vibe here. And
I think metal can be soothing.
To some, not to me.
You can take Jack to his next appointment. Yeah. Let me know what you think.
Yesterday, before this like guest bartender thing, there was like, I had a stressful moment, and I was like, you know what? I need to like blast some like death metal right now.
Cathartic.
So, like, it's just like some thou and like just blast this that. And I was like, as I'm finishing getting ready, and I was like, okay, I'm relaxed. I'm good.
Yeah, this music makes my problem seem like nothing.
I just compared
to my ears.
I think, because I listened to so much metal when I was like in high school, now it's just like, okay, this is like my comfort music.
Yeah.
Just like,
maybe that's my thing. I just like wasn't really exposed to it that young.
Yeah.
I had nostalgia then. I was friends with like the Michigan Screamo kids. I was like, okay, this is like comforting for me.
Yeah.
Just don't like kick me in the teeth. I'm in the front row and I'm good. And I was just like, all right. It's like when you like play music for a baby. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
Like, so relaxed by it now.
Fair enough.
Now pop music makes me a little anxious. I'm like, this is too many beats per minute.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, it's engineered to give me anxiety.
Yeah. Then there's like, there's like a band. I went to see Nine Inch Nails in Philly like 2 years ago, and a band called 100 Gecs opened for them. And I was like, what the fuck is this? This is just like giving me anxiety.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I think this is what the kids are listening to nowadays. It's just like,
did you feel old at the show?
Yes, absolutely. I think every single one of us that was there were like, what the hell's going on?
The thing that's unfair that happened during the pandemic is we went from, Danny and I are the same age, we went from being like part of that crowd to being too old. Like, we couldn't reintegrate. At least that's how I feel.
Yeah, we can't reintegrate.
Right?
It's true, yeah.
Yeah.
My beard's got white in it.
Yeah, exactly. We aged out.
Yeah, I absolutely grew up a lot during the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's like, I cook now, I don't drink as much. Sorry, yeah. I have a savings account. What's going on?
This episode of Joiners is brought to you by Stock Manufacturing, makers of fine hospitality workwear. You obsess over the details in your space, so why stop at your staff's uniforms? Stock has something for every aesthetic. From fine dining to a corner cafe, they've got you covered. Choose from in-stock, ready-to-wear options, or design the perfect custom uniform for your team. For more information, visit stockmfgco.com.
All right, well, to stoke a little bit more anxiety, we've got the gratuity round for you.
Okay.
Right now, let's do it.
Starting with, what's your death row meal?
Death row meal, oh my goodness. A Coney dog.
There you go.
What's it called? Dooley's.
Coney dog from Dooley's. And then I also do this thing where it is a Coney fries, but an egg on the bottom. So then as you're eating it, the egg yolk.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Egg on the bottom.
Like, yes.
That's crazy.
Coney fries,
so an over medium
egg. Yeah.
Over. Fries on top.
Yes.
And then you've got the
chili and cheese. Cheese, yeah.
Wow.
So as you're eating it, you get the egg. It's great.
That is a
good idea. Like protein. An over easy egg.
Maybe that's what we'll put in at Menards.
Yeah. Yes. There you go. The Coney egg special.
Yeah. All right. Favorite hidden gem restaurant?
Favorite hidden gem restaurant. Oh, God.
Could be anywhere.
Doesn't have to be here. Oh, I don't even
I know. I do. We prefer here.
Prefer here.
I feel like you'd have a good answer.
Flying Saucer? I don't know if that's a hidden gem.
Flying Saucer's
great. I love
great.
Flying Saucer. Ellen,
oh, it's on California, just south of Division.
I don't know. It's just so much like
it's like the best diner ever.
I think I just love diners.
Oh, it's so good.
I love diner food.
I'm always confused as to how no one's ever there.
Yeah, it's always there. It's always busy when I'm there.
Oh, really? Do you go on the weekend?
Like, I usually go. Yeah, I mean, I used to live a block away from there, so that was like my...
Every time I'm there, I'm the only one, like me and my wife and kids, maybe the only ones.
The weekends are swamped.
I guess weekdays a lot.
Yeah. If I can't, like, usually it's like if the line's too long at Spitting Jay, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to Flying Saucer.
Yeah, that's great.
Let's do that.
Love that place.
How about Palace Grill?
RIP.
I know. And they're not even working on it.
It's crazy because because I live down the block from there now, I like walk by it on my walk home or I walk to work, and I was like, oh, I should go there for breakfast one day. And then it burnt down, and I was like, God,
I had a breakfast meeting, and I pulled up, and it was boarded up, and the news was out front, WGN. Yeah. I'm like, oh no.
No, I might have been walking home, and I was
arrested?
Like,
yeah, I thought for sure I was going to get arrested for arson.
I was walking home, and I was like, no, not this little place that I have yet to go to.
And like, I walk my dogs by there every day. I'm like, are they working on it?
Yeah,
and they're not. I think they're probably waiting for insurance money to clear or something, yeah. But they're going to reopen.
I hope so.
But like, my wife and I just kind of discovered that place. I mean, we've lived in the area for a long time, yeah. But we just started going like regularly every weekend.
I think it's like, bummer. I grew up going to a lot of like diners. Like there was like three specific diners, like block radius from, Julie's one of them, block radius. So I'm like, I just want a nice little diner.
It's nice. It's very comforting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. What's your favorite? Well, this might be same thing. Favorite fast food?
Favorite fast food. So Burger King?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
That's the first time in 90 interviews that we've had Burger King.
I think it's also like I grew up eating at least like one Whopper a month.
All right. So like, Whoppers.
Yeah.
I like a Whopper.
Sandwich. Well, not the crispy chicken sandwich, but I will also, the most thing that I order there is they were, when I was a vegetarian, they were the only like fast food place doing a veggie burger.
Mm.
And so I ate there a lot.
All right, cool.
And I think now it's like, okay, it is 10:30. I really don't want to go to a restaurant, but like I can get a burger in like 15 minutes. So yeah. Like sometimes I'm like, okay, I'll get a veggie burger. And other times I'm like, you know what? Let's just fuck up a Whopper right now. Same thing. Like they do a halfsies thing right now where they do half fries, half onion rings. And it's the best of both worlds.
I like
that.
That's great.
Yeah. I just had that like 3 days ago.
Wow.
Nice.
I had not considered that. My dad worked at Burger King in high school and he put in his 2-week notice the first day.
Oh no. I've heard a lot of those stories. Yeah. The fast food world is
good on him for
doing the two weeks, though. To Burger Prince.
No.
No, he did not.
No Hamburger University for
him.
Yeah,
no.
No. All right. What's your least favorite food?
Least favorite food. I think I've tried it many, many times. There's like a specific item. Uni?
Yeah.
It's come up a lot.
Yeah, that actually has come up.
I think it's the texture. I like oysters, but I think there's something about like that sea burger that just like falls apart in your mouth. I'm like, no. I think the only time that I really enjoyed it was on like a hand roll. And I think there was just enough rice to max up the...
Yeah.
To like... just combat the texture, but no. Uni.
Good.
Yeah. Uni's the answer.
Yeah.
And what's your least favorite thing at Elska? I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I mean, I have one.
Do you?
I do.
All right, what
no,
is it?
I think it's like we had a dish. There's like three things. No, I will. I tell this to a lot of people.
Grinding his teeth
dust. This is not like, oh, this is the worst thing he's ever put on. It's more like I really don't like sunchokes, artichokes, or snails. And there was a Mafalda dish with all three of them. And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm not going to try this because it's the triple. I love everything there. But that was the one thing I was like, I'm pretty sure this is going to be like, I can't get out of my brain about it. I love the food there, but that's the one thing I'm like, I can't.
What is, you mentioned having a pen thrown at your head. What is a time you've had a good story about a time you've had to cut off a patron at a bar?
Oh, I love this one. So, when I worked at, this is before I was a bartender. I was during my early days at Roast and I was still a barback. I had like served a woman like one glass of wine and then she was just obliterated and I was like, all right, well, this isn't a hotel. I was like, are you staying in the hotel? I was like, she's like, yeah. And it's like, she's like, my husband's playing right now. And like, she points at the TV and I was like, playing? She's like, yeah, husband's playing. I was like, okay. Well, I would like, we looked up her like room number. I had to cut her off and I got secured and I was like, hey, can you walk her up to her room? And we looked at her like Amy Oates. And I was like, wait a minute. Like John Oates? Yes.
Awesome.
We had to cut off Amy Oates, John Oates. I think that's the only one. Thankfully in my like many years of working in restaurants, I haven't had to cut off a lot of people.
No fights at that dive bar with all spirits?
Well, this is, I don't know if I had to cut people off. It's more like can you stop doing cocaine in the bathroom, please?
Yeah.
No, I think that's the only story that I'm like, you are too drunk to be here, so I'm going to need you to leave.
Yeah.
And I guess it's like a lot of people have that experience with her, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like, that's usually in my experience when someone has one drink and they're totally goofed. It's because they're on pills.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I think that's what was happening.
Yeah. Not it's my just, personal experience, but like seeing people who have one drink, it's like, oh, okay.
I think the funniest part was like the security guy that escorted her to her room. John Oates was in the room and he was like, thanks. And like just took her inside. I was like, all right.
So funny. All right. What's your favorite cocktail?
Favorite cocktail? I think it's switched up over the years. So Sazerac used to be my favorite cocktail. I think it was just like, I don't know, just simple and good. And then I think now, I don't know if it's a cocktail, more like a highball. I lay in soda.
Yeah.
There's something about it. I don't know. Simple. It's good. I'll like, if I have to like drink one thing, I think for this last summer, like, even though I don't drink a lot at home, I just like bought a bottle of Lillet and I was like, yeah, this is good.
So
I don't
you
have
like
to feel Lillet
and soda better than Coke Americano and soda?
Yes. I like the floral notes. I think Coke is a little too bitter for me.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think you can tell I don't like bitter stuff.
What's your ratio? Lillet to soda.
Lillet to soda? I'll just do like an ounce and a half to like, whatever,
to
5 ounces.
Yeah.
Just so nice. It's very simple. I'll do like a lime peel in there.
It's delicious.
Yeah. I think like whenever I like take a break from drinking, that's usually like my gateway drug. Like a lime peel, and I was like, okay, I'm back. It's like every once in a while, I just crave that one.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Here's our cameo question from Danomite10.
It's not my name on Instagram.
It might be one of your alter egos.
It's one of my burner accounts.
Danny actually does have several accounts.
I have a couple accounts. I have two different Reddit accounts that I had to make for this Q&A that I did. And I was like, okay, I can like snoop through things and just comment and be like, that's not how you do it. No.
You're a troll.
You gotta be sometimes.
All right. You can only eat one type of fruit for the rest of your life. What are you choosing? I know Danny's answer is mango.
That's right.
Learned that recently.
I learned the hard way. It's not banana. I think.
The hard.
You were relegated to bananas?
Yeah, you were only able to eat bananas for
a
period
of time. I was
a
vegan for a little bit.
So you ate tons of bananas.
I think I like went through this whole like, I don't know, maybe I was like, I read something, I was like, did the whole fruitarian thing, which don't recommend. Bananas will, it will ruin bananas and a lot of other food for you. I learned it's not bananas, but I feel like mango's a good contender, but let me think about this.
One of our employees at Scofflaw was recently telling a story where she used to eat like multiple bananas a day, and then one time she bit into one and there was like this kind of like red core in it. And she just was like, oh, and then never ate a banana again.
A red core?
It was some kind of like different colored hard core to the banana.
Hard?
Yeah. And it was like, I was just so gross.
Is it one of those things where like in figs, they're like an animal? Like,
yeah, I think it had to be. Yeah, I think it was like some gnarly.
Parasite.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Freaked me out.
I think mango's a good answer. We've been getting, we're going to Trader Joe's.
The freeze-dried mangoes are so good, by the way.
Not freeze-dried. No, the dried.
Well, I've done.
Dehydrated.
Yeah, once you go through those enough, which I have,
I do the,
then you go to the freeze-dried, which are actually very good.
What's the next step after that?
I don't know.
Man. I don't like the texture of freeze-dried things.
I'm
a texture person.
Leave it for the astronauts.
Yeah. We had a bunch of astronaut candy the other day, and I was like, I like the taste of this, but this kind of feels weird.
I'm just surprised that, I don't know. It's fun.
No, I think mango's up there, but mango covered in like a chili, some sort of like chili powder. Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's the Mexican me.
It's a good choice.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I think mango's a good one.
Salt
mango
and
like
spicy.
Maybe like a I don't know, a white grape.
Yeah.
Something up there.
I think I could do like, I mean, so random, but if I could do like ripe nectarines infinitely, I'd probably love that. But that's such a hard.
That's some impossible.
Yeah, there's just never.
The window is like, you have 45 minutes to eat that thing.
Yeah, it's like the Mission Impossible mission.
I feel that way about avocados sometimes.
This nectarine will explode into disgust.
I feel that way about avocado sometimes. You'll look over and it's like, oh, fuck.
Exactly.
Are you keeping them in the fridge though?
No.
You should.
The first 2 days, no, I leave them on the counter the first 2 days,
to ripen.
And then I like put them in the fridge.
Yeah,
I
you transfer
that.
Them when
they're
in the zone. Yeah.
I just make tons of guac at home. I mean, the kids love it. I love it. I could eat infinite guac.
Yeah. I will forget about my groceries sometimes, though. So that's like, I feel like I need to stop going and getting large things of groceries. It's like, oh, there's an avocado in the fridge from I don't know when.
Throwing food out that has gone bad is my least favorite thing.
I know, me too. I stopped doing a lot of grocery trips because I'm like, let's be realistic. What am I doing this week? Am I making myself breakfast?
Or you're like, hey, Brad, can you cook all the groceries that are left over?
Oh, he won't do that.
You got to get on the Liz Tierney meal plan.
That's the ticket.
Coming soon.
I'll become okay with buying frozen things and be like, you know what? It's not going to go to waste.
Yeah.
If I'm hungry when I get home at 11 o'clock, that Amy's burritos, they fit the spot. Like, they yeah. like do the job.
For sure.
Yeah.
I've had a brisket in my freezer for, I think, about a year. I think this ship has sailed on that, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Talk to someone who knows.
I know I've done my surf safe, but I don't remember any of it.
Like, yeah, I mean, they would tell you, I don't know. Yeah.
Rob Levitt, when you hear this, text me. Can we do something with that brisket?
That'll chefs let me out know, there, yeah.
yeah. Send us some texts.
I was like, is this questionable? There's only a little bit of freezer burn on it.
Protective ice. Favorite band or musician?
Favorite band or musician. Okay, I've had this. I talk about music a lot because I just love music. I think it's like more like genres of, or like eras of bands.
Okay.
Nine Inch Nails is up there for me.
Which era? 90s?
I think the Pretty Hate Machine was like, I have that. Like, that's like one of my favorites. But then the other day somebody made me remember that I love the self-titled Three Doors Down
Three
record.
Doors Down. What was their Superman? Wasn't that their hit?
Superman, what is the...
Come on, Danny, sing it.
No idea.
Danny's like, oh, I don't know.
My brain's like, now like I'm being put on the spot. I'm like, let me fact check myself. Hold on. What do I actually like in my life?
Okay. Actually, yeah, that's a fun thing. Pull up your Spotify.
Let's see.
Three Doors Down. Oh, Kryptonite. That's the song I was talking about.
Is it Three Doors Down? I'm like really confusing myself.
I think you might be goofed up on that one.
I think I'm so goofed up.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Danny. It's fun.
I'm not goofed up right now. I literally...
Take your time. We'll cut
it. Third Eye Blind. Yeah. Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
Third Eye Blind. Yeah. I like have the worst memory when it comes to names of like things. I'm like, there's this like one actor in this one movie. He has like long hair. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I've seen every single movie by him.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'm like, who's this guy? I was like, that's fucking Nicolas Cage. I was like, oh, I've seen every Nicolas Cage film. Why can't I remember that? No. Third Eye Blind. They're self-titled. I listen to like... that full record.
That's with like Semi-Charmed Life on it?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's one of the best things so ever created.
I went on vacation. I was probably, I don't know, 8 when that album came out. And I had the CD and I had my Discman on the plane. And I left my CD case mm-hmm. on the plane. So for a 10-day trip or whatever, I could only listen to that CD. And I still love it. Yeah. It's still really good. And I listened to it recently and it's still really good.
Yeah. It's like it's a one good of those testament. Things.
Did they have... good albums after that? This the only one I know.
I think that's the only one that I ever listened to. I think it just, there are bands that I'm like, okay, this is good. And I'm like, they come up with a new album. I was like, I don't like you guys anymore.
Yeah, I'm done.
I think that's how I felt about Blur, too. It was like one of their first albums was like the first CD that I ever bought myself. And I was like, yeah, track 2 all the way. And the other stuff, I'm like, I don't know if I can get this with this. It's like a little too poppy for me.
Yeah,
sometimes revisiting just doesn't work out.
Mm-mm. Or then it does work out. I'm a big soundtrack person.
Mm, yeah. What are your soundtracks?
I love the American Psycho soundtrack, and I love the Pulp Fiction soundtrack.
I think the Pulp Fiction soundtrack is a classic.
Yeah, all the Tarantino ones are really good.
Yeah. I think it's a good mix of like different genres. And
what's
just,
on
like,
American
era.
Psycho? Huey Lewis in the News?
A lot of Huey Lewis. It's just that whole, I think... Honestly, I think that entire movie is just a movie about music, and it's like that's just that underlying of it. So a lot of like Phil Collins and Genesis mm-hmm. and
you like yacht rock, or is that dad rock?
I think it's dad rock, but I don't Isn't actually that like that thing? Kind of. I don't listen to that kind of music on a daily basis. I just really love that soundtrack. It's like very if a movie has a good soundtrack, I'm in it.
Here's a soundtrack that doesn't work when you revisit.
Yeah,
Garden State. At the time, I'm like, man, this rules. Just and it hit like the shins and stuff. Yeah. And then I listened to it recently. I'm like, oh, like Imogen Heap. And I went back and I'm like, this kind of sucks. I still like the shins. They're really good live, too.
I don't think
I've
ever seen Garden State.
You're too
young. I haven't
seen
a lot of movies. I have this issue lately where I watched American Pie for the first time a couple weeks ago.
What'd you think?
It was good. It was funny. I'm just like.
It was mind-blowing
at
the time.
At the time,
we were in middle school, and it was like. That was like an adult movie with adult humor you got to watch. That was a big deal. That was very funny.
I watched with my mom and my brother sitting next to me.
So uncomfortable. To watch.
Yeah, great.
So
your mom on one side, your brother on the other side, and a like, big apple pie on the table.
I think somebody was just made a meme reference to And I finally understand. I hate when I'm like, there's like a whatever internet thing, and I'm like, I don't get it because I've never seen the movie.
Oh yeah.
But now, somebody made like a spoof meme about the Dune.
Oh yeah, yeah.
New Dune or
no? Dune the Dune, the Dune popcorn.
Yeah, the buckets.
Bucket.
Yeah, Omnivore sat and posted like about those.
The like whatever the father and son from American Pie and the Dune buckets in the middle.
Yeah. Okay, I have seen it.
It's weird. Look it up. It's like a, if you know, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to explain it to you.
We'll put don't make me say this.
We'll put it in the outro.
Yeah.
Well, we walked right into favorite movie.
Favorite movie. So, oh, God, this is going to make me sound pretentious.
Wait, let's guess her pretentious answer.
I can't even begin to guess.
I can't either.
Okay. Series of movies. I'm, like, stuck between, there's a Jean-Luc Godard movie called Breathless.
Yep,
that I've classic. Seen so many different times. But I also think that Lost Highway by David Lynch is also a great soundtrack.
We're getting esoteric
now. Yeah.
Okay.
Great soundtrack. I think anything David Lynch and then anything like Jean-Luc Godard is up there.
Big Twin Peaks fan?
Yes and no. I think I
know. I feel the same way. I'm like, I love that. And then I'm like, do I actually love that? Or do I just love the idea of it?
No, Twin Peaks
season one. Yeah.
Season one is great.
Yeah.
See, the like the relaunch of it.
Yeah.
It was, I was just like,
I didn't watch it.
I watched some of it and I was like, it's been too long since I've been in this world.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to like rewatch all the old stuff to come into it.
Yeah. I like rewatching things and I'm like, okay, I still like this. But I don't know. That new, I think it's just like too modern and it's like too weird.
Really the campiness of the original doesn't really
it's like too much like dystopian even though it's like I'm okay with him being dystopian, but it was like too much like 2000s dystopian.
Exactly.
I can't get with that version of the dystopian stuff.
Have you guys seen the David Lynch masterclass where he talks about his creative process?
No.
It's wild.
Wait, where he eats it? Well, I know what his process is. He eats at Big Boy like every day, has like a chocolate milkshake and a burger.
He's a very unique dude.
He's like a very strict
But it's funny that he would teach a class on such a specific, he has such a very specific style of work.
There's a, I have a subscription to Criterion, Criterion channel, and there is a like Oz Lynch like documentary, and where he essentially talks about how like Wizard of Oz has inspired all his movies ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which makes sense. Yeah. It's really cool.
Huh.
So that one's like, okay, I understand.
Well, it is, like finding the thing that takes you down the rabbit hole.
Yes.
Like, yeah. It's interesting.
Yep. Wow. It's like cool. And it makes sense.
My mind.
I never thought about it like that. And I watched it and I was like, oh, this makes sense.
Hmm.
But yeah. And then there's like, you watch his like short films and you're like, this is fucking, you're good. Dude, the psycho.
Yeah.
There's a specific podcast that he's on that I think is now like deleted from the internet where he's just like too weird and you're like, oh yeah, no, like why? Like he makes like his like interviewer or interviewee feel very uncomfortable.
Oh, he's the interviewer.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just like, I think he's like with a fan. And like it's now off the internet because I was like, oh, you are too weird for your own good.
He's like, he's a true artist.
Yes.
He's, exists in another kind of reality in a good way.
Yeah. So David, I feel like David Lynch, that's and that and like, I don't know. I just really like the Cronenberg stuff too.
Yeah.
Like Dead Ringers is like one of my favorite movies. Do you not like the revamp?
Yeah.
The like gender swapped revamp.
I haven't seen it.
Like it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
No, I think it's like any kind of revamp is like sometimes falls flat. High Fidelity revamp. Not great.
Mm. Yeah, I did watch that
Fantastic.
One. Yeah, I love the movie. The show is like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like they're trying a little too hard.
Yeah.
All right, and our last question.
Okay.
If you weren't doing this, bartending at Elska, what would you be doing?
God, you know, I ask myself that paralegal. All the time. It's like, what if, oh no, God, no. I would never work in law ever again.
What percentage of people do you think pronounce Elska correctly?
I think a good, 50%. I've heard Elski a lot.
Yeah, so many people
I've heard
say Elski
a lot
to me.
Too. Yeah.
And I'll say Elska right after, like, I'll be like, yep, and I'll reference it by name, like, right as they're saying it.
Is that
it.
Your move when someone mispronounces you, you repeat it, but 100%. You say it right?
Yeah.
I guess that's
just to, like,
kind of
gently
kind
you're
helping.
Of reinforce.
You're helping.
I'm not like, hey, man.
I do a physical
but they
correction.
They continue to just do Elski.
Yeah, like, yeah, I never want to be like, well, actually, it's,
yeah.
No,
for your information.
Yeah. God. No, I've heard Elski. I've heard Elsk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard, hey, how do you pronounce this?
Yeah, that's
I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, that is good.
Elska. And I'm the worst person to pronounce things. So it's like, how do you pronounce this one? I'm like, don't make me do that.
Me. I've only worked here for 5 years.
Yeah. I've only been here. I just work here, you guys. Which is my favorite line in any job. I just work here.
It's my
next
first
to,
day.
Next to, all I know is fine dining and breathing. Which, if you know that reference, you're also as young as I am.
Oh, Danny.
No?
What is it?
Right. I don't know. It's a SpongeBob reference.
Oh, nice. Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at Elska, there was just like a time where like there were so many SpongeBob references that were like, oh, yeah, we're all the same age here.
Guzzo throws out a lot of SpongeBob stuff. I think we missed it by like a few years.
Yeah, missed it.
Yeah. We'll throw on the like the jelly. I think it's like a jellyfish song that's just like drives everybody crazy. Everyone's like, post service. It's great. It's like somebody throws it off and be like, no, it's two. We've had enough.
You guys put it on after service? Like,
I'll put it on randomly after service sometimes, and all of a sudden it just like stops playing. I was like, oh yeah, somebody got to the iPad. It's like somebody had enough. Yeah.
All right. So if you were not doing this,
SpongeBob DJ, she just said.
Okay. If I were not doing just hospitality in general,
yeah.
I feel like I would have like continued in like my pursuit of like photography. I think that's like something that I thought that I was going to become a photographer or like a photojournalist before I like got into paralegal work and before I like decided to take on hospitality full time. I think a photographer. I don't do it as much now, but I think I did it enough when I was younger that I was like, okay, this is what I want to do with my life. And then reality hits you in the face of like, I can't make money doing this.
Yeah.
So let me go work.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
Especially with everybody with an iPhone.
They think they're
a professional photographer.
Yeah. I wanted to be like a food writer at one point as well. It's like, no, everybody has a freaking blog. I had a blog at one point and I was like, no, I think I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
It's just not that it's too competitive, but it feels like it's like, it almost feels like too, like I want to be involved with the food. I don't want to write about the food.
Yeah.
I want to be
Luckily,
involved with
no one has a podcast. I think we're like one of a dozen podcasts.
That's one thing I've never.
In the world.
I feel like I hate the sound of my own voice enough where I'm like, I don't need to hear myself talking all the time.
Yeah. 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 When I listen to the pod, I only listen to Danny.
Yeah. Brad was like, are you gonna listen to your podcast? I was like, I probably
I didn't listen to yours, Brad.
Did he listen to his?
I haven't listened to his. So I think I've listened to a couple of them, but I'm like, I don't know if I like, it's something weird. It's like, you know somebody so personally.
Yeah, you
like,
don't
do I listen? This is also before we dated, so I was like, do I listen to this podcast?
The early ones are really hard to listen for me, are really hard to listen to. Yeah. But I still go back and listen. I was listening to I don't know, one from like a year ago last week, just because I like to kind of keep track of what we've done and how it's changed. The audio quality has gotten so much better. The early ones are unlistenable. Yeah.
I think it's the same for when I go through my old cocktail books and I was like, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
Why did I want to use
like
this?
4 ounces of chartreuse.
Like, why?
Half ounce of spirit.
God.
But that's good to go back and reflect and realize how far you've come.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you don't look back and cringe, it means you're not improving.
Yeah, that's true.
At least that's what I tell myself.
Listen,
yeah,
somebody called me. Somebody at One Point Record called me, and I think it was like out of like just like anger. He's like called me the worst bartender that he's ever met.
Who said this?
I'm not gonna go into names, but an ex-boyfriend of mine.
Oh yeah.
So then when I won my Michelin award, I sent him the link. Worst bartender in the world, huh?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That's a good level of pettiness.
No, I was like, I have one person that I need to send this to right now.
You already had the draft. You just had to insert the link.
No, I'm friends with him, but it was more like a worst bartender in the world, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for
send
the motivation.
Him
the
link.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, I think I'm very grateful and fortunate for the award. It's hard to talk about it because I'm like, Michelin is like so far outside of like the cocktail community, I feel.
Yeah.
That it's like they just started giving awards and like, being the second recipient in Chicago, like after Julia Mimosa, I'm like, are you guys sure?
Yeah.
Are you guys really sure?
You can take it back if you want.
I know. It's on my body now. I can't take it off.
You got a tattoo?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's like, I was like, you know what? This is mine. It's personal. It's like a really honorable thing. And I think I was like, I hadn't gotten the actual plaque. I was like, you know what? I owe it to myself to do this. I also like, It's just a tattoo.
Yeah.
It's just on my body forever. It's like a little star.
We'll include a picture on our throwbacks.
Yeah.
No, there's a picture where I'm like, I got two tattoos the same day. Just like, I'm sure there's a picture of me like struggling through the second one. Like, it's a tiny tattoo, but I was done with the first one. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. Another one.
Yeah.
My wife did that too, but she was at Jazz Fest in New Orleans and she got, I mean, obviously partying drunk, but she like went to get a tattoo and then left and then went back like a few hours later and got another tattoo.
Well, that's
similar thing with you.
No, it was like the same. I think it was just one random like Friday night while we were on break. I was like, you know what? Let's go to Brown Brothers. Let's go get tattoos. And I got like, I picked out some flash, got a little rat. I was like, you know what? I've been wanting I just like want to commemorate this like very special moment in my career. It's like, who knows? This might be the height of my career. I was like, you know, I want to commemorate it. And I was like, two in one. I was like, I always end up getting two tattoos within the span. I take so long to get tattoos, but when I do, it's like I get one and that's like 2 days later I'm like, you know what, let me get another one. Might as well. While I'm like healing. Might as well feel. I think that was my thought process. I was like, you know what? Might as well just rip the band-aid, get another one. It's a tiny one. So it's literally like one took an hour, one took like 5 minutes. It's fine.
Nice.
Danny, you're untatted. Would you ever get one?
It would be.
Actually, you can't, right?
I mean,
as a Jewish man.
I mean, yeah.
Or you can, you just couldn't be buried in a Jewish.
That's what they said.
But that's a rule.
Yes. No, I just haven't. I just think that anything I decided to get tattooed on my body, I would get sick of.
You know what? For a long time, I took so long to be like, you know what? It's on my body forever. I like need to just be really like careful with what I get tattooed on me. And then I was like, you know what? No, whatever. It's just my body. To the point where I was like, my next tattoo is just going to be the words "always sticky" because I'm. It's like bartender life. Like, I tell myself I'm never going to get a bartender tattoo. And you know, I was like, oh, but the words "always sticky" are just so true to like what my profession is.
That's
it's
so
like
funny.
No matter what kind of bar I work behind. Just like, yesterday, I ended up after the guest bartender shift, I was like, there's sugar in my hair, and I'm not surprised.
Always sticky.
I was like, why?
Taking it full circle.
Yes.
All right. Cool. Nice.
Well that's you. A wrap. Yeah. Monica, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for letting me ramble for a little bit.
And that concludes our conversation with Monica Casillas-Rios. Thanks for listening. And remember to check us out on social media at JoinersPod. We're throwing up questions that you can answer and maybe make part of the podcast. We've started doing cameos in the gratuity round. Have your question answered by an industry professional. As always, this episode is produced by Matt Haddock, music by Captain Cuts, and our real work is done by the one and only Joe Guzzo III. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.